Hi, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 628. So much going through my head today. And I don't know where to start. Every day seems to be kind of a new revelation, crazy, new things to think about. Let me talk a little bit about what came into my mind this morning. If you've ever listened to the podcast, you know that morning is my mind, I don't know what you call it, mind expanding time. And I was actually thinking upon matters of church administration. I often do. Now this applies generally to so many things that, you know, you don't want to just shut off because, oh, he's going to talk about religion. You go, no, not strictly. You know, it has to do with administration of people and how one handles that, how one provides that, the kind of leadership needed to handle those things. I was pondering high position. Everybody gets the idea that those in high position are somehow more brilliant, more amazing, can handle so much more than everybody else can. And that might be true to a small degree. But by and large, these are still people endowed with the same kinds of abilities as most people are. You know, even when we are considered great, we are only maybe a degree above anyone else in just the raw capacity and the raw capability. Those who lead might be might use what capacity they have more efficiently, better. I'm not sure, than a person that has the same capacity but chooses not to take advantage of it. I've noticed in life that it's not really so much that there are people that are better than you are. There are just people that take advantage of what they have innately more readily than others. That isn't that the capability isn't there, but that's the will to do something with it, or the desire, you know, any of those things isn't quite there. So, you know, in the LDS churches, with any organization, it's somewhat of a hierarchical thing, tends to be. Even things that try really hard not to be, they still get that way. Why? Because it just works better. It works that way. Even in something that one would call decentralized, like some churches like to be, you're still going to have something of a hierarchy. There will still be those who are leaders who will be given more respect, have more pull, whatever you want to say, whether they have a title that empowers them is another question. But they tend to still have that kind of sway anyway, whether or no. Of course, in the LDS Church, it's structured, it's centralized, quite hierarchical. You know, but in hopefully a different way, not to be dictatorial at all at any level. One hopes if it does get that way, it quickly starts to have problems. But you know, you have levels, and how many people you can really deal with, how many people you can really affect or influence doesn't really change. I don't know if that number really changes drastically. I mean the people you can really have one-to-one personal interaction, life-changing type of a relationship with. I don't think that that number is too great. I don't think a CEO of a company can have a wonderful personal one-on-one relationship with everybody within their company. It can't be done. That's where the hierarchical structure comes from. Now, in a company, it might be, it gets somewhat twisted and distorted from the very reason that, it becomes a you do what I say, It's so easy to fall into kind of a dictatorial style because, it's not a democracy, for one thing. No, people don't tend to vote for who their boss is. And people usually, and a boss, unfortunately, often gets a swelled head to the point to where even if they ask for feedback, it's mostly just kind of a pretense. It's something that's expected in their job, but they will usually proceed as they wish. And I'm not saying all people are like this. I don't want to paint with a big brush here. But, of course, in the LDS Church, we go by the Christian motto is, he who would be the greatest among you will be your servant. It's one of the last things Christ taught. I don't know if it's one of the last, but it was one of the things that Christ taught his apostles when they were kind of jostling for a position. Who's preeminent? And it was like, oh, you want to be preeminent? Okay. The preeminent one ends up serving the most. And that kind of styles the whole method of leadership in the church. So when I was thinking about this and pondering and saying, what if I were in one of those situations, how would I handle it? And it really becomes a whole question of who your circle is. Those over whom you have an influence. Now your circle, the higher up you get, your circle includes people that have their own circles of influence down, 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 until you eventually reach every single person. You always have certain circles of influence. Not that you never see the higher up people. Not that one doesn't see the prophet. One sees the prophet every 6 months. At the very least, sometimes more often than that. At least by satellite, broadcasted to millions of people. And it would be hard for the prophet to know anything about the millions of people. About anything about them at all. They aren't even particularly something of a number to him. He wouldn't know your individual number. He only knows how many people are in the church. He can only really have that kind of personal relationship with a small circle. I almost put the number at, no more than maybe 30 or 40 people. And if you go beyond that, you aren't being a good friend, being a good leader / servant to that group because it's just too much. So, you start delegating off. You start splitting up into smaller, more manageable circles. And, of course, the church is somewhat organized that way. It's organized usually on numbers like 3 and 12, the combination of 2, 15, has a little bit of relevance in some circles. But it's mostly, sounds like somebody's trying to call me. It's not, okay. My phone has a love affair with the number 9. It's always punching it in on its own without really being asked to. And that becomes like that magic number, something between, something below 20. So things are kind of arranged that way. In almost every level of the church, it seems to be that they try to function with a number somewhat less than 20. If you have something more than 20, you know, you need to start splitting things up. And that's the way it goes, you know. In a church of nearly 15 million people, one man cannot administer to all their needs. So there's various levels of trying to do that. And so I was thinking about how one does watch care this way. And, you know, a stake president is the priesthood leader over, in our case, probably between 2,000 and 3,000 members. You know. Well, I'd have to say that's probably the active one. Probably more like 4,000 or 5,000 total. Although some of those people don't really have a whole lot to do with the church. They're either Mormons in name only, or they forget they're Mormons. You know, oh, I didn't know I was a member anymore. I thought I had re-upped my membership card. We don't have membership cards. That just shows how some people look at their membership in the church. They wouldn't even know if they had or not. They figure that when they walked away, 2 years ago, that you just dropped them off the list, and that just indicates their misunderstanding of how these things work. You know, can't be much of a Mormon if you don't even have a clue what the membership, you know, what the membership policies are. That's okay. Somewhat esoteric stuff. We have a whole structure going all the way up and all the way down. Home teachers are probably on the basic level. First level, of course, is always family. You know, it's rare that a family will get to the size of being in excess of 20 people. And I mean immediate family. You know, up from that, at least in an ecclesiastical way, is your home teacher. They usually have a handful of families outside of their own that they just visit and try to be a friend to, help out, to go and give a spiritual message to on a monthly basis. And then from that it goes up. There are quorums, you know, the elders' quorum, the high priest quorum. These are typically they're a bit larger, but then again, they are not overseen by just one man. They're overseen by a triumvirate of sorts. Three. There is a president and his two counselors. And the smart president will split up the load however they want to, whether it's numerically or by responsibility or however else, split up that load among the three. The biggest an elder's quorum can get by revelation from God is 96. And so, you know, each of those men are in a position to handle, 32? Does that sound right? If that's the way you want to split it up. You know, it often doesn't get split up and says, okay, you're going to handle these 32, I'll handle this 32. And rarely does an elder's quorum get that large. Only under really interesting circumstances. But then you can have more quorums too. If that becomes the issue. If there's more than 96, you split it up into two. And that, of course, will get it way down below 96. And, you know, that works that way. There is a quorum of high priests that is actually all the high priests in a stake. That's a variable number. There is no maximum there. But typically, they don't get together as a group very often. They have, you know, that your high priest group is your leader, is your leadership core, you know. It's kind of your leadership group. And they're usually handled because they're often those leaders, you know. The stake president, who's the next level up worker responsibility. He takes care of those thousands of people within a geographic area. And his counselors, there's also a triumvirate there. There's that three again. And the high council, which is usually 12, so there's 15 kind of in that whole group there. Those are the high priests. Those end up being the leadership of the high priest group. And of course, everybody in the high priest group, by and large, either is an ecclesiastical leader of a certain responsibility, pretty hefty one, or has had that responsibility and is looked to as part of as part of the pool from which leaders continue to be drawn. Elders less so. I am an elder at the present time. I have not, it is because of the circumstances of my being in a branch. Priesthood holders in a branch will typically be elders. You do not live in a branch and become a high priest unless you're called to to that regional level leadership calling, either a high counselor or to the stake presidency. That doesn't, you don't become a high priest otherwise. And so, yeah, on my level, it's all basically elders. And we do have high priests, but we have a small number, and they didn't become high priests by hanging around in branches. It was by having done other things. And then coming here, or having other responsibilities. This is all very esoteric, isn't it? But it speaks the whole thing about leadership. Because I've been thinking about being a thought leader. Right now, my responsibility to stay in church, for instance, is as a clerk. It is not a quote-unquote leadership position. In the LDS church, some leadership positions hold keys, which means that they have specific responsibilities that they have that typically can't be delegated to others. And I don't have that. I don't hold keys. I do have a somewhat important office. Being the clerk means that I manage a lot of the day-to-day activities, a lot of the paperwork side of the organization. I don't tend to make decisions. I tend to carry out the decisions that are being made. But I do end up becoming what's termed by, and this is not a religious concept, this is pretty general, which is what I was wanting to get to, is a more general thing, more of a thought leader. When one talks about a leader, they often think about titles and stuff like that. A thought leader is more of a person that has ideas and that is well respected, and that when they sign on to something, a certain number of people will distrust that that's a good idea based upon who said it. And that's different from being a leader. Sometimes, it's always possible that you'll have an incompetent leader chosen, either in a corporation through promotion. It happens so often enough that people who really aren't terribly competent get it put into management that we tell jokes about it, we have phrases about it, it's talked about pretty openly, the Peter Principle. You rise up to your level of incompetence. If you were a good worker at this level and you worked really hard and you were the best and they made you into a manager, sometimes that's a bad move for the very reason that sometimes the best worker doesn't make the best manager. Of course, that's difficult for those, especially for people in somewhat specialized technical fields, it's really hard sometimes to be managed by somebody who can't do what you do. It's always a little bit easier for those people. You know, sometimes it's very easy to have that thought leader become your manager. Sometimes not. Me personally, I don't enjoy management. I've done management once or twice, and I've tended to avoid it since then. I prefer being very skilled and very good at what I do, and gratefully and respectfully let someone else take that responsibility. Even if I may think the responsibility of management, even if I think that person is not particularly better at my work than I am. And I find that I realize, and I don't want to get cocky about it. I don't want to get cocky because that's not useful. Because it kind of gets to the point to where you stop striving in some ways. If you get cocky about, well, I'm really good at this. In fact, I'm even better than my boss. I'm indispensable. That's probably the first big thing. Make sure that you never consider yourself so indispensable that you don't have to be about what's going on. There's going to be and I think I've gotten to that level in a couple of different places. You know, there's the whole church setting. You know, I am an acknowledged leader, although right now I don't particularly hold a leadership calling. I have held leadership callings. I would have to say that in general I am included in that pool of available leadership talent. I am currently in a position that's more along the lines of a technical skill than ecclesiastical, you know, than being really in a heavily used ecclesiastical force. What do you call that? I'm not doing a established ecclesiastical leadership role. I'm not doing that. Although I too tend to get thrown that way anyway, you know, it seems like I'm well respected. And try not to get that into my head. It's something of a trial for me that I try to work on. But at work it got interesting. I fall into the position of being somewhat of a thought leader there. And that's given by other people. I don't take that upon myself. I make comments, and then people can either take them or leave them. I don't want to try to get one up on people. I don't want to do anything like that. That's not interesting to me particularly. I want to be good at what I do. I like being respected for what I do. And I guess that's what I'm really after. And I do have ideas. And I've gotten to the point to where I share them sometimes. I've also hopefully developed a little bit of discretion to know, I hope I have, to keep my mouth shut when, you know, it's going to cause problems. I've found it very valuable to, you know, I am at some distance. My interface with most of the people in my group is through email and through phone calls and things like that. And and that makes it really easy. You know, it's really easy just to remain kind of silent there. Nobody knows the expression on your face. Nobody knows that your hands are poised over the keyboard just going, should I say something? No, hold me back, hold me back. You know, they don't see that. all they see is, you know, it didn't get responded to. You know, or I can just say, hey, that's a good idea, or okay, or whatever. Email is such an interesting way to communicate, which is my primary method, you know, because what you say can get so easily construed. You know, one doesn't know the emotion behind it. When you're on the phone, it helps more. When you're in person, it helps even more. Now, I say it helps for the simple reason that if people think that I'm being vindictive or mean or preachy or stuff like that, when they get in person with me, they go, oh, okay, that wasn't what Jay meant. Because it's obvious. Jay doesn't, hopefully, doesn't carry himself that way as kind of a know-it-all or things like that. Although, by listening to this podcast, more by listening to my emails, once you get, he probably thinks pretty highly of himself. And I end up having to spend a lot of time trying to, in either talk or in typing, you know, my diatribes are terribly long. And it's like, God, we need some time to digest this. And it's like, well, you know, I only make them that long because I want to make sure that I'm not stepping on people's toes. Something that would be very easy to do if I was in somebody's thing. They could see by my inflection that I mean them. I'm just making a comment. I'm just giving my take on something. It isn't meant to be an attack on somebody else, you know. They can see I don't have a sword in my hand. They can see that I'm not like that. And they see that I'm not after their job. You know, there's been opportunities to take higher jobs. There's been opportunities to work my way up the system, which I have not taken because, you know, I have other fish to fry. I have other pursuits to take care of. And I struggle. I struggle a lot. I think more at church than I do at work because the things that go on at work, I'm perfectly happy to let my boss be the boss. I'm not, you know, I don't want his responsibility particularly. I hope they pay him adequately for it, you know. I want him to make more money than I do. Because I want him to have to take more responsibility than I do. I want him to have to fret the paperwork and fret all the other stuff. Not that I want to make his job difficult. If, you know, if there's something I can do to help him, I want to. Because I want him to stay happy. I like him. He's so far in my whole life, Don Ray, I'll give his name because I'm that grateful. I'm grateful for the kind of supervisor he is to me. You know, I can't think of any supervisor that could be more just almost blissful for me. He seems to understand my needs, and he seems to value them. Now, he can't always give me what I want, of course. You know, there are other interests to be taken care of besides, you know, whoa, what are we going to do to make Jay happy today? You know, I don't anticipate that that's going to be a major part of his job. One of my most important things to do is to make sure that I don't cause him headaches. I don't want Don to have headaches because of me. I don't want my area to be a headache for him. I want him to feel like that things are on a smooth keel and everything's okay. Of course, I also want everything in my area to be smooth and on an even keel and everything being okay. I don't want it just to appear that way. I want it to be that way. Because, frankly, I can't. I don't have the capability. Just like I said, you know, I can't have a personal relationship with 6,000 people. I also can't keep up the pretense of something very well. I've always been bad at that. I've had to just be competent, or I finally got into a position where I can be competent and that works, you know. I think all of us have been in jobs and positions and certain circumstances where we're bluffing a little. The job's actually beyond us. Hopefully, we grow into the ability to be able to handle our job. All the tasks that need to be done, everything that's on our little list of job requirements, that we'll be able to grow into the people that can do them. Or decide to go and do something else instead. I'm not discounting either one as being a very viable way to handle that situation. I'm happy to say, I think, and Don can make whatever judgment he wishes on it, and if he shares it with me, I'll try to do my best to do better. You know, to say, you know, that's, well, okay, I think I've rattled on about that long enough. To say that that's what, you know, and maybe that's a function of thought leadership too. It's also being confident, because there really isn't that management aspect of things. It really doesn't get down to managing people. It doesn't get down to being an administrative function. And I'm grateful. I'm very happy to be a thought leader. Now, in church issues, I struggle so much when I see something that if I intervene and in these ways, I would view it as intervening toward, you know, usurping power, even for a few moments, to take care of something, then letting it go again. But that's not appropriate. That's not how it works. You know, you need to be supportive of the person that's the leader. You won't be the leader forever. You know, roles in the church are fluid. Now, the role I have in the church right now might not seem very fluid because I've had it for, I just looked back, I've had it for almost 6 years. Being the clerk, you know. Of course, everybody's very happy with me and they don't want me to change. They don't want it to go anywhere, you know, because they don't want the job. Everybody knows that if somebody else got the job, there would be, at the very best, there would be a period of time of some chaos. As they got confident at. The fact that I'm confident at it now, and you might as well just keep your confident people where they are, you know, that's part of the whole mix. So, you know, how much can one really handle? Hopefully I take some of the burden off of other people, and I'm told that I do in many ways, in many roles. I take the burden off. A lot of things just happen because Jay's there. Jay will handle them. You know, my supervisor doesn't have to remind everybody about Techie Talk, and I don't. Last time I wasn't the one that did it. One of my other people did it. He began to take some of a leadership role in Techie Talk, and I'm perfectly willing to let him do it. I don't mind just having a support role in it. You know, being the presenter once every 3 months, I call it propaganda, you know, mostly getting the word out. It's more of a promotion thing. I call it propaganda just for fun. It's not really true. Doing the promotional stuff to lead up to it, they all like what I do, you know, and it may or may, you know, people may say, well, Jason, you're real cocky, and they go, I don't know. People ask me. If people stopped asking me, I'd stop doing it, you know. I said, that's that simple. If you don't want me to do it, just say, Jay, I want to handle it this time. It's like, cool, that's great. Enjoy. If you need any help, let me know. You know, if you guys don't need me, if I need to be off doing something else besides Techie Talk, you know, and that becomes my assignment, okay. You know, I might sit there and go, God, no, I really miss Techie Talk, and I really thought I was really good at that. So that's not the end all. You know, it's not all about, well, let's just keep Jay happy. You know, it's about other things too. You know, I am not known for my team player mentality. But I try to be kind. I try to take into account other people's needs, other people's abilities. Because I think people, I know I personally like doing things that I seem to have a penchant for. As opposed to things I really stink at. Now, since I'm a remote person, I am kind of a one-man shop where I am, I have to be at least pretty competent at every, at all the responsibilities of somebody in my job. There's nobody to share it with, you know. We can't split into different roles, you know, and have them take what they like and me take what I like, and we kind of split up the stuff we both detest. Can't do that. So, anyway, I'm to my destination. What did I really get down to talking about? I don't remember what the ultimate topic was at first. Whatever it was. I know it was about taking care of each other. And that's the kind of attitude that we need to have toward everybody. Not competitive. I am not a competitive person at all. If people get the impression that I am competitive, I'll probably floor them one day when I say, "That's great. You take it and you run with it. Enjoy." And it's like, "What? You don't want to compete with me?" And you go, "No, I don't compete." If you got the impression that I do, then I'm really sorry. I'm really sorry that you got that impression. If you're looking for somebody to compete with, I'm not your man. I don't compete. You know, there's some things that I want, and I might work to get them, and one might construe that as competing. Or I guess one could, I guess. If there's like one job and I want the job and somebody else wants the job, one of us is going to get it. But that's not, you know, I don't consider that competition. I consider that trying to get something. You know, I'm not going to pull dirty stunts to try to make it happen. Either I'll get it or I won't. I trust the fact that the system is going to pick up the person that they really want. It may be based on ability. It may not. And that's neither here nor there. You know, if I get picked and the person who wanted to make the decision didn't get to and they became my boss, it would be a horrible circumstance for all of us. He would be constantly trying to find ways to get rid of me. And, you know, my life would suck. I don't want my life to suck. I want my life to be happy. Well, I'm at my destination. This is it. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 628. And we'll talk to you again another time. Where's my pointer? Have a great day.